You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Laura. It's great to talk to you. This Friday in Orange County, California.
Woohoo!
Pretty good.
I know. Well, and so what are you and Mom up to this weekend? Do you guys have any plans?
Oh, man, it's date night. You know, if you're empty nesters and you still like each other, then every night's date night.
So awesome.
What we're going to do this afternoon is take off a little bit early, go down to the beach, just kind of walk around for a while, and then go out to eat somewhere. So that's our, and then the rest of the weekend's kind of chill. We're serving at church on Sunday, but then on Monday we fly to North Carolina to be with our Leadership Edge team there for a week. So kind of a chill weekend in Southern California for us.
Sounds really good. Well, and one thing that I think you guys do really well is you really take advantage of the beach. It seems like you get there very often, which, you know, I think once people move here, it's easy just not to go. So that's really fun that you guys are going to go.
Yeah. Well, we're looking for it. Janet loves the beach.
And yeah. So
because
yes,
of
does.
That, I love the beach.
There you go. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Dad, we're focusing on an interesting leadership topic today. So can you introduce the topic to us and tell us, I guess, kind of like how this became important to you?
You bet. So our topic is accountability, protecting the future of your organization. And that is an interesting topic. You know, for a number of years, I was a business ethics advisor with the Kenan Institute for Ethics at Duke University. And through that, also got to work with the Coach K Center of Leadership and Ethics at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke, and then with Duke Corporate Education, which is an executive training program. And in that time, I thought a lot and learned a lot, and we taught a lot about corporate responsibility, about accountability.
Okay.
And so it became a topic that I have pondered through the years because I've thought that in the short term, a lot of times it doesn't make sense for us either individually or as organizations to maintain accountability. But those organizations who don't maintain accountability, as we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, what they don't realize is they're jeopardizing their future. And I can illustrate that in a couple of ways. When I came to Duke in the summer of 1994, I, by different means that God put together, got involved with the Duke fraternity system, and they're in the Duke Interfraternity Council, and I was on their advisory board for a number of years. And this is John's telling of what that was like. Others may describe it in different ways, but pretty quickly, I was both amazed and just dumbfounded by how unaccountable the fraternities at Duke seemed to any other part of the university or the Durham community.
Interesting.
These tended to be, you know, middle class, upper middle class white guys. And they did all kinds of things that were just wrong, you know, just lots of public drunkenness, lots of public misbehavior. A lot of things that were very insensitive towards women, very insensitive towards minorities. And they just got by with it. And it was always amazing to me that they just had no sense of that they were, or showed no sense that they were part of a community. And so at different times, they would get in trouble, you know, because of either social norms that they had violated or actual laws that they had violated or university policies. And I began to see when they got in trouble, no one really cared. No one was on their side. You know, the non-Greek students didn't like them and were, you know, generally put off by them. The administration largely looked like had their fill of them. Their national organizations who were trying to regulate them had kind of had their fill of them. And so when they would get in trouble, it was just like no one cared. No one wanted to help them.
Yeah.
And I began to think, you know, this is what an unaccountable organization looks like. It looks just like this. And then another example, a movie came out a few years ago called Dark Waters. And it was a chronicling of the DuPont company and how for years it had knowingly polluted the ground and groundwaters and water in a West Virginia community to where livestock was dying, people were dying. And this movie chronicles not only like a lack of accountability by DuPont on this, but really obfuscation, like just covering it up. And
yeah.
And, you know, that ended up costing that company $671 million that they had to put out to, in a sense, repay in some degree the damage that they had done. So, you know, as I think about those two negative examples, I think of this is what it looks like when organizations are not accountable. And the reason I think it jeopardizes their future is like with the fraternities, again, they get in trouble and no one cares. No one's going to fight for them. No one's going to try to help them out. And I would see time and time again, different fraternity chapters at Duke that would just be closed down, you know, some temporarily, some permanently, because there was no future because they had lived unaccountably. And with DuPont, you know, DuPont's still a corporation and all that, but they're a corporation minus $671 million.
Seriously.
And they're a corporation that I guess at least for a while would have been hard to recruit new employees to and would have been hard to have had really proud and motivated employees knowing that they were working for a company that had done such as that. So it reminded me of a quote. There was a man back in the days of the American Revolution who was an interesting figure. He was a political figure and theorist. His name was Thomas Paine. He wrote a number of books, one of which was called Common Sense. He's called the father of the American Revolution. And he wrote this one time. He said, a body of men, and he was writing kind of to the times, it's really a body of people, men and women, holding themselves accountable to nobody, ought not to be trusted by anybody. I'm going to say that again. A body of men or body of persons holding themselves accountable to nobody ought not to be trusted by anybody. And so a part of what we're getting at today is accountability on the part of organizations is that way by which they build trust, that they can be trusted, that they are a valued member of the community, and that, you know, we want to even fight for them at times because we know they're good players. Interestingly enough, Thomas Paine lived a very unaccountable life, though he would write such as this. And it's written that at his funeral, again, he had been an international figure. At his funeral, there were six people there.
Oh, man.
Because no one cared.
Man. Well, this is definitely, this is an interesting topic. Like, I don't think I have ever before preparing for the podcast, I guess, thought about organizational accountability. But like, as you were talking, a couple of thoughts that came to mind were one, kind of like personal accountability, like with both the fraternity organization that you described or with DuPont. You know, you can get away with it for a while, it seems like, but eventually it kind of falls apart. Like kind of with the Me Too movement that we've seen since, I guess, the late 90s or lots of other ways that there is more accountability. So I guess the kind of accountability that you're talking about seems to be a different sort than what I usually think of when I think of accountability, especially in the Christian community. Mm-hmm. So, like, how would you define organizational accountability?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned kind of the personal accountability in the Christian community. And the way we tend to, you know, when we throw around the phrase of I need to be accountable or I was accountable to this person or we need an accountability group, usually in Christian circles, what that means is, you know, on a personal level, there's either some behavior or attitude I need to get rid of.
Okay.
Or there's an behavior attitude that I need to start having. And so I'm going to, like on a weekly basis, report to someone or to some group as to how that's going.
Yeah.
You know, am I stopping the behavior this week? How did I do with not doing the behavior? Or am I doing the behavior? And again, it's a personal thing. It's usually behavioral or attitudinal, and it's a reporting kind of thing. When we talk about corporate accountability, we're talking about taking responsibility for the behaviors of your organization and the impact of those behaviors on the stakeholders. So you're taking responsibility for that. And by stakeholders, what we mean are a stakeholder is that person or those people who are directly or indirectly impacted by the actions of the organization.
Okay.
So say back to the Duke fraternity system, you know, they were accountable to themselves as brothers in the fraternity. They were accountable to their national organization. They were accountable to the university at which they existed. They were accountable to the non-Greek students at that university. In some ways, they were accountable to the other fraternities in that if they did something that caused people to hate fraternities, it was going to impact all the fraternities.
Yeah.
And they, one of their stakeholders was the community of Durham. A number of these fraternities had what they called off-campus houses, and they would just have these, you know, blaring parties till, you know, the wee hours of the morning with lots of drunkenness and craziness in a neighborhood that had, you know, families and kids. And so there was a whole cascade of stakeholders, of people who were being affected by their behavior, either positively or negatively. And, you know, knowing those guys and knowing what it takes to get into Duke, I know that they were aware that they had stakeholders, that there were people who were being impacted. You know, it just seemed like they just didn't care. Like, they were smart enough to know, yeah, there's a ripple effect of our behaviors and it impacts all kinds of people. But it just, you know, if you looked at how they operated, it just seemed like they didn't give a rip about that.
And why was that, Dad?
I'm sorry?
Why was that? Was it just they couldn't see any connection to how it positively benefited them to be accountable? Or they just, for the sake of expediency, like, didn't see that as a necessary step? Like, why?
Well, again, this is my telling of that era at Duke. I think it was just like organizational self-absorption.
Uh-huh.
Like they were just absorbed into their selves, their brotherhood, their next party, their rush class. And And I guess it's what you would call a blind spot, where they just didn't see it or take any time to see that this is no way to build something that's going to have longevity and that's going to be a positive. And it was interesting because sometimes I would kind of get in their face and I would say, you know, how can you even justify the existence of your fraternity right now? And they would just go into this warm discussion about the amazing brotherhood that there is between them. And you know, who was I to say that they weren't feeling that, that they weren't feeling that brotherhood? But again, I had to begin to think, but what kind of brotherhood is this?
Yeah.
If, you know, we're feeling all warm and bonded as brothers while we're just kind of thumbing our nose at everyone around us.
Well,
like, that doesn't sound like brotherhood to me.
Totally. And as you're talking, it seems like, yeah, like if we all have blind spots and even organizationally can have blind spots, then yeah, that accountability is needed and like maybe humility is needed.
Yeah, there you go. Humility. Yeah, and we're going to get to that in a little bit more detail in a minute, but I think there wasn't much humility going around at that time. You know, I think with DuPont, you know, their stakeholders were their employees, certainly. It was the community in which they operated their businesses. It was certainly their stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, the communities in which their businesses existed. You could even say that their stakeholders had to do with their customers and their suppliers. There were a number of people who were affected by the impacts of the actions of this company. And again, I would imagine they stayed very aware of their stockholders, because you know a lot of the money that comes in was through, you know, their stockholders.
Yeah.
But they seem to think that they could just fly above any real accountability to their local communities and just hide things.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, I think sometimes when you're describing these stories, it's just like, how could they have thought that way?
Yeah.
But then we all have our blind spots.
Oh, totally.
And, you know, there have been plenty of decisions I've made in my life where people could have said, how could he have ever thought that way? How could he have acted that way?
Yeah.
I think same. There can just be, you know, a blindness that kind of comes in.
Yeah. Totally. I can see that too. So I guess, do you have any, I mean, these are like really dark, and even like the Thomas Paine and, you know, like the, just these blind spots. Are there any positive examples of organizational accountability that you've seen, or like any, I guess, ideas of companies that are doing it well?
Well, one that certainly did it well back in the 1980s was the Johnson & Johnson company that was and is the producer of Tylenol. And this was, you know, you wouldn't have remembered this story, but there was a time in 1982 where seven people in the Chicago area had bought capsules of extra strength Tylenol just at local stores, and somehow those capsules had been laced with cyanide.
Oh my gosh.
And they died.
Wow.
And so, you know, the company has a credo, and that is basically their statement of how they're going to live as a company. And the first paragraph of the Johnson & Johnson credo is this. It says, "We believe our first responsibility..." And again, this is a company that, you know, has stockholders and all that. But it says, "Our first responsibility is to the patients, doctors, and nurses, to the mothers and fathers, and all others who use our products and services. In meeting their needs, everything we do must be of high quality. We must constantly strive to provide value, reduce our cost, and maintain reasonable prices. Customers' orders must be serviced promptly and accurately. Our business partners must have an opportunity to make a fair profit. So they tell you up front, okay, who are we most, like, first accountable to?
Mm-hmm.
We're first accountable to the patients, doctors, nurses, mothers, and fathers who use our products. And so because of that, they immediately pulled 31 million bottles of Tylenol.
Wow.
From their store shelves, which was, you know, millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Of lost profit. And in the short term, it was an amazing hit on them. But in the long term, they not only came back, you know, to where they had been with sales, they even exceeded that. They were in a better place. And I think a lot of that was because both the public, the consumers, really appreciated the sacrifice, the immediate sacrifice. It wasn't like, well, we're not going to do anything till someone kind of ties it back to us. But
yeah,
the immediate sacrifice, even though it was just over 7 bottles that had been tainted, and they valued that. And then also, I think they trusted the company. They knew that the company was going to do right. And so I think that's a great example of a company who the first thing was they had clearly enunciated who are their stakeholders and what are our behaviors towards our stakeholders going to be. You know, that was just the first paragraph of their credo. The next one starts with, we are responsible to our employees who work with us throughout the world. We must provide, you know, a certain kind of workplace for them, and gets into that. And then it goes on to the next, you know, the next level of people to whom they're accountable. And so they had clearly defined this, and it's interesting. The stockholders of the company were the last people mentioned in their credo.
Huh.
It says, our final responsibility is to our stockholders. Business must make a sound profit. We must experiment with new ideas. Research must be carried on. So they clearly had lined out who their stakeholders were. They had lined out the kinds of behaviors that we're going to practice with those stakeholders. And so then when a cataclysmic event happens, like people being poisoned through taking your medicine, they knew what to do. And fortunately, their board and their leaders had the guts to actually do it. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's really inspirational. And one thing that's interesting about how you're describing it is, you know, I think a lot of times I think of, like, if there is institutional accountability, it's like the FDA held them accountable, where the, yes, the impetus is like, well, when they force our hand, we'll fall, you know, or whatever. But that this was really intrinsically motivated, which is just a really different thing.
Yep. Yep. Well, I completely agree.
So this is really interesting and important. I'm trying to think about, how does this apply to those of us who are in positions of keeping organizations accountable to their stakeholders?
Yeah. So, you know, if you're not like the chairman of the board or the president of company and trying to keep it accountable, what does this say to those of us either who are like middle managers or entry-level employees in companies, or who are, you know, our life is our marriage and our family, or our involvement in our church or in our community? And what I've thought about with that is, it would be so interesting for us to think about, okay, in each of the spheres of influence that I exist in, who are my stakeholders? Like in my marriage and family, who are the stakeholders? Who are the people who are affected by my actions, by our behavior? In the community that I'm a part of, who are the stakeholders there? are there any stakeholders? I think in the U.S. and even in the U.S. Christian community, we tend to think that on an individual basis, there's not really accountability.
Hmm.
You know, there's not really a people are affected by how I act, decisions I make, and I need to be humble enough and I guess be honest enough to for there not to be a lot of surprises as to what I'm up to, how it's going to impact you, how it's going to affect you. It is interesting to me that we don't think more like that. One of the ways I'm learning it right now is for the first time ever since Janet and I moved to California, we live in a community that has a homeowners association.
Hmm.
And we've never been a part of an HOA before. And again, our HOA is great. I think they're very fair and all that. And at least a few of them are actually friends of mine now. But that's a different thing. Like, I never thought that, you know, before we replace the windows in our house, we need to report to the HOA that we're going to have our windows replaced. And we need to get them to approve our replacement plan.
Hmm, mm-hmm.
I was like, what? You know, and and then our house had some termite damage. And so there was going to need to be some pretty significant repairs to some of the exterior of our house. And I would have never thought that I needed to submit a report to the HOA outlining the damage, outlining the kind of repairs that were going to be done, and then have them approve this and even give some direction as to what color paints could be used and all that kind of stuff. You know, I thought with an HOA, it's just like, you know, unfortunately, you have to pay money every month, but you do get some benefits from it. And then I just get to be an American and live my life, and it's none
right.
of their business what I do.
Right.
Well, boy, am I learning, you know, it is. And you know, some listeners may be thinking, golly, where'd this HOA come from? But I don't think it's that different from others in our area.
Yeah.
They do have a ruling responsibility. And so, in a situation like this, I could play it, you know, kind of like some companies have and just, well, I'm just going to hide everything. I'm not going to tell them. I'm going to, you know, ask forgiveness instead of ask permission, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or, you know, before the Lord, I can say, okay, God, this is a group to whom I'm accountable. And that means something to you, God.
Hmm.
And so, God, give me an honest heart. And even if I think it's trivial, even if it's like, I'm like, why is it any of their business what we do with this? That's so, you know, I need to be accountable because that's how this is set up. So here I am doing this podcast on organizational accountability, and yet this last year has been a huge learning to me about a new group to whom now I'm having to be accountable, and it has really at times ruffled my feathers. And again, nothing, I'm not saying anything bad about the HOA. I think they're being really honest and true to what they're here to do. It's just, I've never lived in a community like this, and it's been a huge adjustment. I think,
yeah.
You know, similarly in the Christian church, you know, the idea of being individual Christians being accountable to their pastors. I mean, that almost sounds un-American or, you know, like cultish.
Hmm.
But, you know, in Hebrews 13:17, it says, obey your leaders and submit to them as those who keep watch over your souls.
Yeah.
And this should be a joy to them and not, you know, a bother or a pain for them.
Yeah.
And so part of, if their role there is to watch over my soul, then I need to not be hiding my soul from them. I need to be in the kind of relationship with them to where they're easily able to see this is the condition of John's soul.
That's really good.
And so again, an accountability, because our church is impacted by how we live our lives. Our church is impacted by the health of our soul or the disease of our soul. And Hebrews 13:17 says that I'm to obey and to submit to them in a way that makes it easy for them to watch over my soul, to know the condition of my soul. And again, this isn't a verse that we go to. I think sometimes it's a verse that pastors are a little bit afraid to preach on in some ways because of how it could be taken in bad ways. But one of the things that I've learned through the years and made a practice is I try to every year meet with one of the pastors that I know that I have a relationship with and just ask him, how's it been for you to watch over my soul this year? And do you have any concerns? Do you feel that you know how my soul is? Is there anything you think I'm hiding or that you want to know more about? And honestly, the first time I usually do this with a pastor, they're just aghast. Like they don't even know what to do, because I think no one's ever done this with them. You know, no one's ever gone to that verse and says, am I doing this well? But I found that I need that kind of accountability. I need to know that the pastors know how I'm doing, so that if there's any concern, they can speak into that early and there not be explosions or breakdowns. So those are a couple of ways as I'm learning and growing, that this idea of thinking through stakeholders and then thinking through what kind of accountability would God want me to have there, and then going ahead and having it.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Like, that's interesting, and just something I think for me to think through of, like, yeah, am I a joy for the staff to watch over my soul? And even the thing you said earlier about like our accountability in the various contexts, like, does matter to God. So I think, yeah, that isn't something that I've thought much about. So Dad, I know we're needing to start wrapping up, but what specifically do you hope that our listeners do in response to this idea that, you know, maintaining accountability protects the future of your organization?
Yeah. Well, I think whether your organization is just you and your wife, if it's you and your wife and kids, if it's you and your wife and your HOA or your church or some civic organization you're a part of or some business, it is really a responsible and healthy thing to think through, okay, who are the people that are impacted by how we are, how we do? And who are the people that God's called me to be accountable to? And how am I doing at taking initiative, not waiting till they come ask me, but taking initiative and letting them know how things are going? And we do this not out of legalism or just out of a ought to. We do this because we want to build trust with those around us. We want there to be like peace and shalom in our relationships. And all of us want a good future. And I think part of having a good future in whatever organization you're part of involves taking the responsibility to be accountable to those around you. So I think just give some thought to that.
Yeah. No, that's really good, Dad. And that's a great kind of question to end on. Do you mind wrapping us up?
Don't at all. So with this topic, you know, we're all in process. We're all learning and growing. This, for some of our listeners, this may be like, I've never thought of any of this before. For some of our listeners, it could be, yeah, I've been thinking about this, but this has given me some clearer thoughts. I just encourage you to take the next steps in it. And if we at Leadership Edge can be of any help to you in this or any other way, please let us know. We're a Christian leadership development organization that especially uses mentoring as a way to develop God-honoring leaders. And you can learn more about us at our website, www.lead-edge.com. So thanks for listening today, and hope this has been of help to you.
Thanks so much, Dad. And thanks, listeners, for joining us.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.